Today's critique examines the Life Value Framework, a manifesto proposing to replace our current profit-driven global systems with an AI-audited governance model prioritized entirely on sustaining human and ecological life.
It's an incredibly ambitious piece of work with just immense philosophical depth.
Absolutely. But relying on artificial intelligence as a flawlessly impartial auditor overlooks the deeply ingrained human biases required to program its foundational parameters.
Yeah, that's exactly the primary issue here. When you really look closely at Section 5 of the material, the authors establish this impartial auditor as the ultimate workaround to human flaws.
Right.
It's basically pitched as the definitive solution to our biological ego and what the text calls the chosenness myths trauma and dichotomy Manichaeism Armageddon syndromes.
Those are a mouthful.
It really are. But the argument is that an AI, it doesn't have a national identity. It doesn't carry historical tribal baggage. So it can just subjectively track the universal life necessities without prejudice.
I mean, it's an incredibly appealing concept on paper.
Oh, definitely.
The idea that some algorithmic savior can just bypass all our biological blind spots and objectively apply the primary axiom of value to every administrative decision, it's a very powerful vision.
It is.
But the central weakness here is treating the AI as a perfectly neutral entity that simply appears out of the ether and just, you know, operates in a vacuum.
Yeah, that's the blind spot.
The text brilliantly diagnoses the deep-rooted human pathologies driving our global crises, but then it completely glosses over the fact that flawed humans are the ones who must define, code, and weigh the hard parameters of the life value metric. And these are humans admittedly compromised by these exact tribal scripts.
Right, because if the foundation of this entire planetary solvency roadmap rests on the impartial auditor accurately identifying objective disvalue, the origin of its programming is the single most vulnerable point in the entire framework.
Exactly.
You are essentially trusting compromised entities to perfectly code an uncompromised system. It feels like a massive leap of faith in a document that otherwise relies on really rigorous structural logic.
So to solve this, the authors need to explicitly acknowledge the limitations of algorithmic neutrality within the text and introduce a robust governance mechanism.
Yes.
The framework must detail exactly how the AI's core parameters are collectively established, continuously monitored, and actively protected from the very human biases it seeks to replace. You have to show your work on how the machine is kept honest.
Let's actually consider how they might practically structure that safeguard. Because it can't just be a small, homogeneous team of tech developers in a single geographic location determining the hard parameters of universal life necessities for the entire globe.
No, that would be a disaster.
It inherently embeds a specific cultural worldview directly into the machine.
Exactly. So a concrete way to improve this section would be to introduce a new subsection detailing a consensus protocol for the impartial auditor.
I like that.
A global consortium would collaborate to set the initial primary axiom of value into code. And when we say diverse, we mean a deliberate structuring that represents a massive variety of ecological and social realities.
Right. The text needs to address the messy, real-world logistics of getting global superpowers, developing nations, and indigenous populations to actually agree on a singular foundational code for what constitutes value.
And it definitely shouldn't stop at the initial coding phase.
No, systems drift.
Exactly. Even with a perfect consensus protocol, things change. Another concrete step would be adding a continuous feedback loop where the AI's audits are regularly cross-checked by independent multinational civil councils.
Because we have to remember that AI models learn from vast amounts of historical data. And our historical data is overwhelmingly biased toward capital multiplication.
The money sequence.
Yes, the money sequence and the war state.
That historical data problem is massive. If you just unleash an AI on human history, it's going to logically conclude that aggressive resource extraction and military dominance are the primary drivers of success.
Because historically, they have been.
Exactly. Those civil councils would act as a crucial human failsafe, constantly auditing the auditor to prevent the machine from quietly adopting the destructive logic of the past through its training data.
Which really brings us to the training phase itself. The material mentions disvalue erasure over in Appendix C, which is the fascinating way our current systems use euphemisms like collateral damage to hide the destruction of life infrastructure.
Oh, that's such a good point.
The authors really need to pull that concept forward and detail exactly how the AI will be taught to recognize the difference between genuine unavoidable collateral damage and systemic disvalue erasure.
That's a vital distinction. Because how do you train a model to see through sophisticated cultural violence without accidentally embedding a new form of cultural bias into its neural network?
You have to explicitly show it.
Right. Detailing that specific training phase, showing the reader the exact mechanisms used to scrub the training data of geopolitical leanings would massively reinforce the credibility of the impartial auditor.
If the text can map out the consensus protocol, the civil council oversight, and the rigorous training phase, the AI stops feeling like a magic wand and starts looking like a viable, resilient governance tool.
Moving on to our next point. The heavy reliance on dense, axiological, and psychological terminology creates a formidable barrier to entry for the practical policymakers this document aims to mobilize.
This is arguably the biggest obstacle to the framework's actual real-world adoption.
Without a doubt.
The theoretical foundation is undeniably robust. Building on John McMurtry's life value ontoaxiology and Johann Galtung's peace research provides a stunning academic diagnosis of our systemic incoherence.
It's brilliant.
Is, but the fundamental weakness is that the text is heavily laden with complex academic acronyms and highly specialized jargon. We're talking about terms like the MC sequence, LVOA, and the repression projection mechanism.
Which creates a massive disconnect regarding who is actually supposed to consume and act on this document.
Exactly.
This is a manifesto that explicitly provides a quick audit for local leaders and urgently calls for everyday citizens to apply the policy test to their local municipal structures. But the language used alienates the exact audience of practitioners, mayors, city planners, and administrators who are tasked with executing this roadmap to planetary solvency.
Imagine handing this framework to a city council member in a mid-sized town who is just trying to figure out the annual zoning budget.
They'd be lost.
If they have to constantly flip to a glossary in the appendix just to decipher the foundational arguments of the manifesto, they are going to put the document down.
Yeah, ideas need to be infectious to create political change. They need to be easily communicable so they can spread through community organizing meetings and town halls without requiring a prerequisite degree in axiology.
So to fix this, the authors need to streamline the core vocabulary for the practitioner audience. The suggestion here is to translate the dense academic frameworks into intuitive, accessible policy language right there within the main body of the text.
And you don't have to abandon the intellectual rigor to do that.
Not at all. You just reserve the deep theoretical terminology for the appendices and the glossary, keeping the main roadmap lean and actionable.
Let's look at some concrete ways they can implement this translation. Take Section 4, for example. Right now, it might lead with a highly clinical heading discussing the CMT and DMA syndromes.
Right.
They should absolutely reframe that section title to something immediately recognizable to a layperson. Something like the subconscious architecture of conflict or us versus them framing.
That immediately lowers the barrier to entry. The formal acronyms can certainly be introduced briefly so the academic lineage is preserved, but they shouldn't be the primary shorthand used throughout the practical roadmap.
Definitely not.
When a local leader is trying to identify these pathologies in their own municipal policies, asking them to look for us versus them framing is infinitely more practical than asking them to identify a DMA syndrome.
We see the exact same issue over in Section V6 with the master map of regulation. The material makes a strong case for systemic transition by highlighting the 5 stages of regulation, but the text relies heavily on clinical terms like allostasis and homeostasis.
Yeah, another concrete improvement is to consistently pair these clinical terms with their plain English equivalents directly in the main text every single time they are used.
So instead of just writing allostasis, the authors could write allostasis or adaptive recovery.
And they could consistently pair homeostasis with stabilization.
It seems like a minor stylistic tweak, but the psychological difference for the reader is huge. It ensures that a local administrator reading the master map can instantly grasp the tactical concept without having their reading flow interrupted by a trip to the back of the document.
Let's also look at the actual tools the framework provides to the reader, like the enablement test found in the policy test section.
Oh, yes.
Right now, the prompt asks the user to determine if an action measurably, enables a more inclusive range of thought, feeling, or action.
While that is philosophically very precise, it is far too abstract for a practical setting like a zoning board meeting.
Totally. If I am a mayor evaluating a new infrastructure proposal, enabling a more inclusive range of feeling is not a metric I can easily quantify or defend to my constituents.
So a highly effective concrete step would be to simplify the wording of that test into direct, actionable policy language. Instead of the current phrasing, they should rewrite the core question as, does this project directly expand the community's capacity to live securely, think freely, and act creatively?
That is so much better. That is a question a mayor can immediately ask a contractor pitching a new development project. It takes the profound academic theory and turns it into a sharp, usable political tool.
Which leads right into our final area of focus. The proposed roadmap outlines precisely where global capital must be redirected, but severely underestimates the entrenched political friction required to execute that transition.
This is perhaps the most daunting challenge facing the entire manifesto. Section VI brilliantly mandates a shift from what it calls death work to life work.
Yes.
It calls for the massive conversion of global military budgets into civil commons funds, specifically to rebuild power grids, water systems, and public health networks.
The objective logic of that transition is absolutely flawless.
It is flawless, but the weakness is that the material describes its utopian destination while almost entirely glossing over the monumental, real-world roadblock standing in the way.
Right.
The text seemingly operates on the assumption that clearly identifying this logical necessity and using the AI auditor to objectively point out the disvalue of the military-industrial complex will somehow be sufficient to overcome the massive institutionalized power of the war state.
It's a really dangerous assumption to make. The text perfectly identifies the structural violence of our current system, but it completely lacks a strategy for dismantling the fierce political and economic resistance that actively protects that system.
Exactly.
The corporations profiting from the money sequence and the geopolitical actors whose entire influence relies on full-spectrum dominance are not simply going to hand over their multi-trillion dollar budgets just because an impartial algorithm flagged their activities as a supreme disvalue.
Functional requirements don't magically dissolve entrenched industries. Even if the logic is irrefutable, you have entire economies built around these systems.
So true.
To make this framework truly robust, the authors need to incorporate a strategic transition phase within the master map. This new phase must specifically address the practical, economic, and political methods required for dismantling or bypassing established institutional resistance. You have to map the friction just as thoroughly as you map the solvency.
To give a concrete example of what that looks like, the authors should add a distinct friction mitigation stage prior to achieving homeostasis in the master map.
That would be incredibly helpful.
This section would outline specific economic incentives for current military contractors to actually want to pivot toward infrastructure life work. You cannot just abruptly turn off the tap of defense spending without crashing economies.
Right.
You have to redirect the flow of capital in a way that co-opts the resistance.
Exactly. For instance, they could propose a policy mechanism where governments guarantee equivalent long-term contracts for building sustainable water desalination plants to the exact same massive corporations that currently manufacture arms.
That's a great pivot.
You neutralize the corporate resistance by replacing their extractive money sequence with a regenerative life sequence alternative that maintains their economic viability during the transition phase. You make it profitable for them to participate in planetary solvency.
But you also can't rely solely on corporate incentives. You have to account for the power of the population. Another concrete example for this transition phase is to deeply discuss the role of grassroots mobilization.
Yes.
If the current administrative systems are stubbornly life-blind and refuse to adopt the framework, the text needs to explain how everyday citizens can leverage the AI's hard data to force legislative change from the bottom up.
The AI provides the objective proof of disvalue.
but the manifesto needs to tell the public how to wield that proof as a political weapon.
Precisely.
This could involve outlining specific strategies for civil disobedience, massive union action, or aggressive public divestment campaigns from the money sequence. How do you organize a labor strike using the impartial auditor's data as the undeniable justification? That is the kind of practical friction-mitigating strategy the document needs.
And speaking of labor, a third concrete example for improvement must address the transition of the labor force itself. The text rightfully demands that we move away from exploitative extraction and weapons manufacturing.
Yes, it does.
But the authors need to give concrete examples of how the millions of everyday workers currently reliant on the military-industrial complex for their own nutritional and vocational security will be financially supported and retrained during the massive shift to the care economy.
This is a critical psychological and economic blind spot. If the framework ignores the immediate survival needs of the people currently employed by the mechanics of disvalue, those very people will become the fiercest political resistance to planetary solvency.
Absolutely.
You can't tell a defense plant worker that their job is a supreme disvalue without simultaneously handing them a guaranteed, well-paying role in building green infrastructure. The authors must ensure these workers do not become collateral damage of the transition itself.
Well said. By implementing these strategic, friction-mitigating steps, the authors will transform a brilliant philosophical diagnostic into a genuinely actionable, battle-ready roadmap that survives the chaotic reality of global transition.
Definitely.
To wrap up today's critique, we discuss the incredible ambition of the Life Value Framework and offered three structural areas for refinement. First, we explored the hidden human biases in programming the AI impartial auditor, noting that human coders carry the very tribal baggage the AI is meant to avoid.
Right.
Second, we examine the urgent need to translate dense axiological and psychological terminology into accessible, plain English language so that local leaders and policymakers can actually utilize the document.
Crucial step.
And finally, we looked at the absolute necessity of mapping out concrete political and economic strategies to overcome entrenched institutional resistance during the global transition from death work to life work.
To practically implement these suggestions, we recommend designing a transparent consensus protocol and continuous civil oversight loop for coding the AI's core parameters. We also suggest streamlining academic jargon into intuitive policy terms, like use versus them framing directly within the main text.
Yes.
And lastly, add a specific transition phase to the master map detailing how to economically incentivize the military-industrial complex to pivot toward life work, ensuring the labor force is protected throughout the shift.
We invite the authors to apply these structural adjustments to the framework and submit the revised document back to the critique for further exploration.